In a chair on the porch of a cottage in the mountains, an old man sits. The summer sun warms the air, the trees, the cottage, the porch. But the old man wears a wool cap and wraps himself in a blanket and still feels cold. Yet he pushes aside his discomfort, even as he ignores the sharp pain in his throat, to focus on his work. Paper and pencil are his instruments, a lap desk his workspace. The task transports him beyond his chill, beyond his pain, across the years. He recounts his life for a public that he cannot see, but that is watching him, and has been watching him for the 2 decades since he became the nation's hero. He hadn't intended to write his story. He was willing to let the other officers of the Civil War duel for historical reputation. His own reputation was secure. He had commanded the army that defeated the rebellion and held the Union together. Not even Lincoln ranked higher in popular esteem at the moment of victory, and Lincoln was murdered within the week of Appomattox. Other Union generals, Sherman, Sheridan, Meade, had their partisans, including the thousands of soldiers who had served under them. He didn't begrudge them their laurels, nor did he seek any for himself. The laurels came to him unsought. He had always had a gift for conjuring images in his mind's eye. It was one of the secrets of his military success. He could visualize a battlefield and perceive where the enemy's weaknesses were and how to exploit them, where his own weaknesses were and how to remedy them. He can visualize his battlefields even now, Fort Donelson, Shiloh, Vicksburg, Chattanooga, the Wilderness, Cold Harbor, Richmond. He can hear the whistle of the artillery shells, feel their concussion as they exploded, smell the burned powder and the sweat of horses and men. Most of all, he can summon the secret blessing of war, the liberating clarity of purpose felt by those who thrive amid war's chaos. He remembers his first taste of battle in Mexico after his graduation from West Point. He had been frightened on approaching the enemy, but discovered that he never functioned better than when under fire. Others became rattled and confused. He grew calm and focused. The end of the Mexican War left him at a loss. He fumbled through the following decade, disappointing himself and those who knew him. He was resigned to mediocrity when another war, the Great War for the Union, rescued him. He doesn't write so swiftly now as he did when issuing dozens of orders a day. He fell out of the physical habit of writing during his 8 years as president when secretaries took his dictation. That was almost the only advantage life in politics had over life in the military. The business of the military is war, and war is simple and straightforward. In war, the objective is plain, and the measure of success undeniable. Your side wins or it loses. You live or you die. War is brutal, but its brutality allows differences of opinion to be resolved definitively. In politics, things are never so straightforward. In politics, differences of opinion are rarely resolved and almost never definitively. In politics, the best outcomes are typically compromises that leave all parties grumbling. In politics, the ignorant and venal have as much right to their votes as the educated and upstanding.